A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 5, verses 15 to 24. Text 15. Shinaravacha itava bhamana yoktva virarama mahamati tam sanibharasa kapita sudhino rajasevaka. The great saint Narada Muni continued, great soul Prahlad Maharaj became silent after saying this to his teachers Sunda and Amarka, the seminal sons of Shukacharya. These so-called brahmanas then became angry at him. Because they were servants of Hiranyakashipu, they were very sorry, and to chastise Prahlad Maharaj, they spoke as follows. So, this morning we heard what is the best of everything that Prahlad Maharaj heard from his teacher? Tatsaru manye sarvarya dehinam. Mm-hmm. Okay. So those who are too attached to bodily relationship, they're in andakupam. They should get out and go to the forest of Vrindavan. Okay. So Hiranyakashipu is furious. He demands an explanation from Prahlad Maharaj, from his teachers actually. What are you teaching my son in your school? Because Sandana Marka, they were hired. They are servants of Hiranyakashipu. They are paid servants, so they had to agree with the boss. Hiranyakashipu is the boss. So they had to find out who had polluted Prahlad. And they said, don't worry, we will deprogram him. We will re-educate Prahlad so he won't have this polluted ideas. And Prahlad was astonished how these people are thinking in terms of friends and enemies. I don't understand. I've heard about this before, but now I'm seeing it, actually. So, two reasons why Sanda and Amarka were not happy that Prahlad was a devotee. And that is given in the purport. Two reasons. Can anybody give me a reason why? I mean, they're Brahmins. They're supposed to be happy if somebody becomes a devotee. What was their problem? Why weren't they happy with Prahlad? Yes.
He would influence others,
yes.
He didn't respect what they was teaching.
Yes, he didn't repeat what they taught him. He wasn't respecting Janmashtami.
They weren't real Brahmins.
They weren't real Brahmins. They were seminal Brahmins. Mm-hmm.
They were in the independent.
Okay. Right. So they were Brahman in name only. They were seminal Brahmins, plus they were servants of Hiranyakashipu. Yes. Yes, he says in the purport, the Brahman Sandana Marka, being seminal sons of Shukacharya, did not actually possess real brahminical qualifications, for they engaged as servants of Hiranyakashipu. An actual Brahman is very much satisfied to see anyone, not to speak of his disciple, become a devotee of Lord Krishna. So we'll discuss this point in more detail in the 15th chapter discussion on Varnashram. It discusses different types of Brahmins, the fruitive Brahmins, the Gyani, Karmikanda Brahmins. So he's a Karmakanda Brahmin. Then there's the Gyanakanda Brahmins. Then there's a pure devotee Brahmin. There's different classifications. So we can hear more about that from the verses of Bhagavatam itself when we get later in the Varnashram chapters.
Brahmabandhu.
Yes, well, not exactly. There is, that's not a Brahmin. The Brahmabandhu, it's not a classification of Brahmin. That's a non-fallen Brahmin. So Prabhupada says in the purport, the word Shukram and Saman, the sons of Shukacharya, were Brahmins by birthright, but an actual Brahmin is one who possesses brahminical qualities. So we read that sentence. An actual Brahmin is very much satisfied to see anyone, to speak of his disciple, become a devotee of Lord Krishna. Such Brahmins are meant to satisfy the Supreme Master. A Brahmin is strictly prohibited from becoming a servant of anyone else, for that is the business of dogs and shudras. A dog must satisfy his master, but a Brahmin does not have to satisfy anyone. He is simply meant to satisfy Krishna, anakulyena, krishnanushilanam. That is the real qualification of a Brahmin. Because Sanda and Amarka were seminal Brahmins and had become servants of such a master as Hiranyakashipu, they unnecessarily wanted to chastise Prahlad Maharaj. So there's an example of a Brahmin. I mean, Prabhupada tells stories of different Brahmins. There was one Brahmin in Krishnanagar a few hundred years ago, and he was very, very poor. So a rich landlord came and said, "Oh, I see you are poor. Let me help you. Let me give you something." And the Brahmin said, "No, I'm very satisfied. My disciples, they come and they bring me some rice, and I cook the rice, and I take the leaves from the tamarind tree, and we eat, and I'm happy. I don't need your money. I don't need anything from you." So this is the actual Brahmin. And there was a story I heard about Alexander the Great. He came to conquer India, and he met one sage. He met one saintly person. And he also wanted to give something to that saintly person. And so he said, "What can I give you? I want to give you something." And the sage said, "Yes, you're in my sunlight. Can you just move out of the way?" So this is Vedic culture. They're satisfied. The Brahmins are satisfied. They don't need all these complications. So these Brahmins were not of that category. They were hired servants of Hiranyakashipu. Verse 16, "Oh, please bring me a stick. This Prahlad is damaging our name and fame. Because of his bad intelligence, he has become like a cinder in the dynasty of the demons. Now he needs to be treated by the fourth of the four kinds of political diplomacy." So cinder means that he's going to burn the dynasty. He's going to burn down Hiranyakashipu. So they're saying, okay, now we have to treat him. What is the fourth kind? Ad Vakyalam, which means punishment. So there are four principles, Prabhupada says in the purport: legal orders, pacification, offer of a post, or finally, weapons. When there are no other arguments, he is punished. In logic, this is called argumentum ad vakyalam. 22 seminal Brahmin Sandha in America failed to extract from Prahlad Maharaj the cause for his having opinions different from those of his father. They called for a stick with which to chastise him to satisfy their master, Hiranyakashipu. Because Prahlad had become a devotee, they considered him to be contaminated by bad intelligence and to be the worst descendant in the family of demons. As it is said, where ignorance is bliss, it is folly to be wise. In a society or family in which everyone is a demon, for someone to become a Vaishnava is certainly folly. Thus Prahlad Maharaj was charged with bad intelligence because he was among demons, including his teachers, who were supposedly Brahmins. So here is the opposite. The Brahmins are supposed to be the saintly Vaishnavas, and here they are the demons. They're on the side of the demons because they're serving demons. So therefore they have to teach or preach demoniac philosophy. Prabhupada says, "The members of our Krishna conscious movement," this is paragraph 2, "are in a position similar to that of Prahlad Maharaj. All over the world, 99% of the people are godless demons." So what is the world population? 6 billion. So how many are demons? If that's 99, 1% would be easier to find. What's 60 million is 1%. Well, that's a lot. So that we have a lot of big field for preaching. 60 million is 1%. So 99% are demons, and 60 million is our preaching field. All the demons. Okay. Yes, of course, this is Mahaprabhu's movement, and he came to deliver all the demons as well. Yes. So 99% are godless demons. Yes, I think my husband was an atheist before he became a devotee. And he became a devotee. Therefore, our preaching of Krishna consciousness following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj is always hampered by many impediments. Because of their fault of being devotees, the American boys who have sacrificed everything for preaching Krishna consciousness are charged with being members of the CIA. When we first came to India, it was very big, 1972. Everyone thought we were CIA agents because we were all Americans. We didn't have different other devotees from other countries. It was all Americans. And so they thought, yes, you are CIA And they wouldn't give us, we had only like 3 months tourist visa, and every three, 6 months, you increase it 3 months, and every 6 months we were kicked out of the country, and we just get a visa and come back. This was the first 10 years of my being in India. It was like that. Just going, coming, going, coming. But actually it was Krishna's mercy, because then we preached, like we were one of the first devotees in Nepal. We were the first devotees in Bangkok. We were the first devotees in Burma. They had never seen devotees before in Burma. And we went there with just somebody's phone number. We had no money. They send us with a one-way ticket every time. Go get your visa. go get a visa for India. So we have to go there, collect money to get back, and find a place to stay, find food. But in Burma was the best place. We had no problem there because we were the first devotees, so we met the Hindus. And we were three times a day we were eating so much. There's so many programs, and it was really nice. We went to Bangladesh with... we just went to the Gaudiya Math there. There was a Gaudiya Math in Bangladesh. And then we found a place in the Hindu ghetto to stay. So we got our visa there. But that was, CIA. We were CIA. They thought... CIA is the American Secret Intelligence... Central Intelligence Agency. Oh, they're the spies, American spies. They thought we were American spies when we first came to India. That was one problem. Then the second... Yeah, like KGB, But not, see, in Russia, the KGB spies on their own people. But this was for, you know, like other countries, spies like that. I don't know what they call that in Russia. So that was who they thought we were. Moreover, the seminal Brahmins in India, who say one can become a Brahmin only if born in a Brahmin family, charge us with ruining the Hindu system of religion. And they will find so many faults with us. Oh, they're not washing their hands properly, this, that. Of course, the fact is that one becomes a Brahmin by qualification. Because we are training Europeans and Americans to become qualified and are awarding them Brahminical status, we are being charged with destroying the Hindu religion. And there is one conversation of Prabhupada with some French professor, and that professor said, but what you're teaching, this is against the Vedic culture. He said that. So nonetheless, confronting all kinds of difficulties, we must spread the Krishna conscious movement with great determination, like that of Prahlad Maharaj. In spite of being the son of the demon Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad never feared the chastisements of the seminal Brahmins, sons of a demoniac father. I think I told this story once before. When the devotees came to Vrindavan in 1972, and one devotee... They went to visit the temples of the Goswamis, and at one of the temples, the Goswamis were praising them and saying, oh yes, you're doing such a nice seva. In the next life, you will certainly be born as a Goswami in Vrindavan. And Srila Prabhupada said, oh, you should tell them, oh, you're doing such nice seva as a Goswami in Vrindavan. Next life, you will be born in ISKCON. Now that was Prabhupada's vision. You will preach. You will go and preach. And so this is Prabhupada's vision. He was equal to everyone. So there is a lecture in Bombay in 1974, 325-27 lecture in third canto. Prabhupada talks about this. Why did they think we were CIA? Why were they afraid, actually? Because previously the British people came to India, and they sent missionaries first. And then they got control of the government. So then they said, okay, now the Americans are trying to do the same thing. They're sending their missionaries, American missionaries, preaching Hinduism, and they're going to get control of the government. So Prabhupada said, why this misunderstanding? Because there is no Krishna consciousness. So this must have been written at the time we were in India. Prabhupada wrote these purports. When we were, that was 72, 73, 74, and Prabhupada was here. So Prabhupada says, because any sane man can understand, if these people are CIA, how can they be? They have no comfort. Everything is denied. No meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, all no's. And they've come here as CIA. People have no common intelligence, and they're putting all impediments. So that was the time in Bombay. You cannot construct this temple. So that time in the Indian Parliament, our movement came up. The questioning came up in the Indian Parliament. They said, who are these Hare Krishna people? Where are they getting their money? And I think they are understood to be CIA. So this was the question that was put in the Indian Parliament, Prabhupada saying here. And what action shall this our government take against them? So this was brought up in the Indian Parliament. So the reply, of course, Prabhupada had preached to some of the ministers, and one was the home minister. So the home minister replied that we have no information they are CIA, so there's no question of action. They're not CIA, we don't need to take action. And they're selling books, they're getting money, and foreign exchange is coming to India. So that was the reply. So why? Still in Bombay, there was a problem to get the temple, to build the temple. They're refusing. And even here, I think, in Vrindavan, no, not refusing, but now it's different. Now you have to pay 1 crore to make a building in, I think, Kadia land or something like that. Government wants 1 crore, or so I heard. So there's different tactics. Yeah. Yeah. You want to build? Okay, you are very rich, ISKCON. We know you have some nice donors, so why not? You should donate to us first. Anyway.
They're asking for that kind of bribe.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think it's some kind of tax or something, building tax. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I don't know the details, but anyway, these things are going on. Now it's different. Everything is based on money. So, yes, you can buy your visa now. For money, for a sum of money. Everything is moving now. Now is no problem for visa. So verse 17, this rascal Prahlad has appeared like a thorn tree in a forest of sandalwood. To cut down sandalwood trees, an axe is needed, and the wood of the thorn tree is very suitable for the handle of such an axe. Lord Vishnu is the axe for cutting down the sandalwood forest of the family of demons, and this Prahlad is the handle for that axe. So, sandalwood forest of Hiranyakashipu's family, they're saying, and Prahlad is the handle of the axe. Purport. Thorn trees generally grow in deserted places, not in sandalwood forests. So, actually, your analogy is not correct, Prabhupada's saying. But these seminal Brahmins Sunda and Amarka compared the dynasty of the Daitya Hiranyakashipu to a sandalwood forest and compared Prahlad Maharaj to a hard, strong thorn tree that could provide the handle of an axe. They compared Lord Vishnu to the axe itself. An axe alone cannot cut a thorn tree. It needs a handle, which may be made of the wood of a thorn tree. Thus, the thorn tree of demoniac civilization can be cut to pieces by the axe of Vishnu Bhakti, devotional service to Lord Krishna. Some of the members of the demoniac civilization, like Prahlad Maharaj, may become the handle for the axe to assist Lord Vishnu. Thus, the entire forest of demoniac civilization can be cut to pieces. So that was Prabhupada's hope, that the young people of the Western civilization would cut down the 1%, it was less than 1%, who are devotees. They would cut down the Western demoniac civilization. So especially, Prabhupada used this analogy in reference to the scientists. He had our godbrother, Swarup Damodar Maharaj. He was saying, we can use the science to defeat them, just like Swarup Damodar. He's PhD and he's using his science to defeat their atheistic arguments. There's a Bengali proverb that I take your mortar and pestle and break your teeth with your own mortar and pestle. So he said that this means we use the scientists' own weapons and with them we defeat their atheistic philosophy. So now that is happening with that new theory they have in America. What is that called? I can't remember. Design. Design.
Intelligent design.
Intelligent design. So they're using the scientists' own arguments of chemistry about the complexity of the cell and all the things they know about the cell to defeat their argument that it's by chance. But there is a design. There is intelligence behind it. So Prabhupada says, there is another example. A hatchet is sitting. A hatchet means an axe. This hatchet, an axe, is sitting in front of a tree. And the tree is asking, what are you doing here? And the hatchet replies, I've come to cut you down. And the tree said, no, you cannot cut me down alone, but with the help of my descendants, you can do it. So the idea is the axe handle is made of wood, So without the assistance of the wooden tree, the hatchet is useless. Similarly, we use our materialistic knowledge to defeat the atheistic philosophy of the scientists. So this was a letter to a person who was a scientist. You can also continue your studies and learn what is mortar and pestle so you can break their teeth. Prabhupada said, you go to school, learn their scientific philosophy and defeat them with it. That was his idea. Now, Prabhupada used this analogy also about bogus yogis. Prabhupada named four prominent Mayavadi gurus, and he noted that each one of them was a Bengali. He said they had ruined the whole world with their philosophy, but there was another Bengali who would destroy them, and that was Prabhupada. Prabhupada would destroy all these other Bengalis who were preaching, and there were a lot of them preaching, a lot of gurus in the West. So he said, although the American boys and girls are very intelligent, they could not cut down the Bengalis. Only if another Bengali helped them could they defeat the rascal Bengalis. Prabhupada said. So this is going on. We don't want to name any names, but you can understand who they are. So then, no, there were others also at the time when Prabhupada was here preaching in America. Now here's another story, which doesn't have that much to do with this, but it was along with this story, so I'll just repeat it. On another occasion, Prabhupada told his Indian listeners not to be like those Indians who are quick to say, I know Krishna, I know Krishna. That's one of our problems when we first came to India, that everyone knew Bhagavad Gita and knew Krishna, and they didn't want to hear what we had to say. So Prabhupada said, there was once a man who every day brought water to the temple of Lord Jagannath. The man used to think, I don't need to see Lord Jagannath. I come here every day so I can see him anytime I want. Let the others see him. Day after day went by, but the man never went to see Lord Jagannath. And finally, the man died without once seeing Jagannath. So Prabhupada instructed his Indian audience to learn from his disciples how to serve Krishna. That was Prabhupada. Yeah, he brought us here because all the Indians wanted to go to America and London. So he said, therefore he brought us here to teach them whether we are giving up our skyscrapers and cars and we're taking to Krishna Bhakti. So that really intrigued the Indian people when we first came. So verse 18, Sanda and Amarka, teachers of Prahlad Maharaj, chastised and threatened their disciple in various ways and began teaching him about the paths of religion, economic development, and sense gratification. This is the way they educated him. Purport. In this verse, the word Prahadam, Grahayam, Asa are important. The words Graham, Asa literally mean they tried to induce Prahlad Maharaj to accept the paths of Dharma, Artha, and Kama, religion, economic development, and sense gratification. People are generally preoccupied with these three concerns without interest in the path of liberation. Hiranyakashipu, the father of Prahlad Maharaj, was simply interested in gold and sense enjoyment. The word Hiranya means gold, and Kashipu refers to soft cushions and bedding on which people enjoy sense gratification. The word Prahlad, however, refers to one who is always joyful in understanding Brahman, Brahma, Bhuta, Prasanatma. Isn't that interesting? So there's something in these names which we are hearing. Just by thinking of these names, you can understand the position of the different personalities. Hiranya, Kashipu, and Prahlad, Alad. Prasanatma. Prahlad means Prasanatma, always joyful. Prahlad is always joyful in worshipping the Lord, but in accordance with the instructions of Hiranyakashipu, the teachers are interested in teaching him about material things. Materialistic persons think the path of religion is meant for improving their material conditions. Materialist goes to a temple to worship many varieties of demigods just to receive some benediction to improve his material life. He goes to a sadhu or so-called swami to take advantage of an easy method for achieving material opulence. In the name of religion, the so-called sadhus try to satisfy the senses of a materialist by showing them shortcuts to material opulence. So there are many gurus like that. Yes, Adi Purush. Shanda and Amarka.
Shanda is a breeding bull.
Shanda is what?
Breeding bull.
Breeding
bull.
Bull. Breeding bull, okay. A breeding bull. So the bull that is...
Seminal succession.
Yeah, seminal succession. And Amarka?
Amarka is...
Fool or...
No, a monkey.
Monkey. Market Viragya, yeah. Okay, we've got a bull and a monkey here. Breeding bull, and thank you for that, Adi Purush. There is something in a name, Sanda and Amarka. Breeding bull and a monkey. Okay, please forgive me, Sanda and Amarka. I didn't say it. He said it. Okay, there are other meanings also. Okay. So there you have it. There's something in the name here. Something symbolic here is going on. Okay, where are we? In the name of religion, shortcuts. Sometimes they give some talisman or blessing. Sometimes they give dust also. What was that?
Watches.
Or watches? He's giving watches now. He used to be Rasculus. He's upgraded to modern technology. He's upgraded from Rasculus to watches. In Prabhupada's time, he was giving Rasculus. And now he's giving watches. And city. Yes. Where is that? I was in Mayapur last year. And one of our... They were giving speeches in glorification of it was Jaiptak Maharaj's appearance day. They were giving speeches in glorification. One devotee stood up and he was telling about how he was saved by the mercy of his Guru Maharaj. And so it was a very interesting story. He said he went to visit one temple, and in this temple there was some big, big guru. And this guru was giving ashes to people, you know, for their health, for money, for certain things. They call it vibhuti. Vibhuti. So they had bags and bags. In fact, they showed them their factory in the basement where they were producing bags of ashes, bags of them. So then the guru happened to come by and he took some of the bags and threw them at this devotee, and everyone was scrambling for the bags, the other people. And the devotee didn't know what was happening. And they were saying, oh, you're so fortunate. He's giving you a lot of blessings and mercy. So then he left that temple and he went that night, he went home. The devotee went to sleep and then he had a dream. He was having dreams where this guru was preaching to him and trying to control him by his mystic power. And he was very disturbed by these dreams. He kept waking up. And then finally, he found his congregational journal magazine. He took it, he put it under his pillow. And that magazine saved him from that bogus guru. He didn't have any more bad dreams again. So he said, this is the mercy of my Guru Maharaj. I was saved. So anyway, these things are happening. That they give these vibhutis to you, and you have to be careful with that. And they try to control you. So this was Sanda and Amarka were in this disciplic succession. Verse 19. After some time, the teacher, Sanda and Amarka, thought that Prahlad Maharaj was sufficiently educated in diplomatic affairs of pacifying public leaders, appeasing them by giving them lucrative posts, dividing and ruling over them, and punishing them in cases of disobedience. Then one day, after Prahlad's mother had personally washed the boy and dressed him nicely with sufficient ornaments, they presented him before his father. Purport. So here you can see the flip chart, four diplomatic principles, sama, dana, veda, and danda. We hear these sometimes in our studies. Sama, dana, veda, and danda. That's the Sanskrit. It was somewhere, I think, I found it somewhere in the Sanskrit. Pacifying, charity, dividing, and punishment. These are the four diplomatic principles. Srila Prabhupada says, it is essential for a student who is going to be a ruler or king to learn the four diplomatic principles. There is always rivalry between a king and his citizens. Therefore, when a citizen agitates the public against the king, the duty of the king is to call him and try to pacify him with sweet words, saying, you are very important in the state. Why should you disturb the public with some new cause for agitation? If a citizen is not pacified, the king should then offer him some lucrative post as a governor or minister, any post that draws a high salary, so that he may be agreeable. If the enemy still goes on agitating the public, the king should try to create dissension in the enemy's camp. But if he still continues, the king should employ argumentum ad baculum, severe punishment, by putting him in jail or placing him before a firing squad. So these are the four diplomatic principles. The teacher is appointed by Hiranyakashipu to taught Prahlad Maharaj how to be a diplomat so that he could rule over the citizens very nicely. And so this was the teachings of Sanda and Amarka, four diplomatic principles. So verse 20, when Hiranyakashipu saw that his child had fallen at his feet and was offering obeisances as an affectionate father, he immediately began showering blessings upon the child and embraced him with both arms. A father naturally feels happy to embrace his son, and Hiranyakashipu became very happy in this way. 21. Narada Muni continued, "My dear King Yudhisthira, Hiranyakashipu seated Prahlad Maharaj on his lap and began smelling his head, with affectionate tears gliding down from his eyes and moistening the child's smiling face. He spoke to his son as follows. Hiranyakashipu said, "My dear Prahlad, my dear son, O long-lived one, for so much time you have heard many things from your teachers. Now, please repeat to me whatever you think is the best of that knowledge." So we go in the middle of that purport. Prahlad Maharaj responded to the inquiry of his father with the instructions he had received from his spiritual master, Narada. Thus, there was again a difference of opinion, because Prahlad Maharaj wanted to relate the best thing he had learned from his spiritual master, whereas Hiranyakashipu expected to hear about politics and diplomacy Prahlad had learned from Sanda and Amarka. Now the dissension between the father and son became increasingly intense as Prahlad Maharaj began to say what he had learned from his guru, Narada Muni. Verses 23 and 24, very famous verses. Shiparadvacha, Shavanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Parasevanam, Archanam, Mandanam, Dasyam, Sakyamatmani Vedanam, Itipum Sakta, Vishnu, Bhaktischena, Lakshana, Kriyeta, Bhagavatyatha, Tamanyati, Tamutamam. Prahlad Maharaj said, hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of Lord Vishnu, remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 types of paraphernalia, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming his servant, considering the Lord one's best friend, and surrendering everything unto him, in other words, serving him with body, mind, and words. These nine processes are accepted as pure devotional service. One who has dedicated his life to the service of Krishna through these nine methods should be understood to be the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. So I got a comment here from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, which Adipurush gave me. And the question was, what did you learn from your guru? And Prahlad Maharaj took it. These two lowly vipras are not gurus. So I will speak what I heard from my guru, Narada Muni. So he was speaking what he actually heard from his guru. He didn't consider Sanda and Amarka gurus. So, purport. When Prahlad Maharaj was asked by his father to say something from whatever he had learned, he considered that what he had learned from his spiritual master was the best of all teachings, whereas what he had learned about diplomacy from his material teachers, Sanda and Amarka, was useless. So paragraph 1, we'll go to the end of paragraph 1. One should have complete faith in the words of Krishna, who says, "He is the great well-wishing friend of everyone, Suhridam Sarabhutanam." A devotee considers Krishna the only friend. This is called Sakyam, Pumsarpita Vishnu. The word Pumsa means by all living entities. There are no distinctions permitting only a man or only a Brahman to offer devotional service to the Lord. Everyone can do so, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Although women, Vaishyas, and Shudras are considered less intelligent, they also can become devotees and return home, back to Godhead. So now in paragraph 2, it's talking about sannyas. A tritandi sannyasi carries three dandas, kaya, mano, vakya, body, mind, and words. All of these should be offered to Vishnu, then one can begin devotional service. So this is real devotee. Then in paragraph 3, near the end of paragraph 3, Sakyam means being a well-wisher of Krishna. Krishna wants everyone to surrender unto him because everyone is constitutionally his servant. Therefore, as a sincere friend of Krishna, one should preach this philosophy, requesting everyone to surrender unto Krishna. So that is the meaning of Sakyam. If you're a preacher, then you're a friend of Krishna. That's friendship with Krishna. Atmani Vedanam means offering Krishna everything, including one's body, mind, intelligence, and whatever one may possess. Then in paragraph 4, one's sincere endeavor to perform these 9 processes of devotional service is technically called bhakti. The word adha means directly. One should not be like the karmis who perform pious activities and formally offer the results to Krishna. That is karma kanda. One should not aspire for the results of his pious activities, should dedicate oneself fully and then act piously. In other words, one should act for satisfaction of Lord Vishnu, not for the satisfaction of his own senses. That is the meaning of the word adha, directly. So we, you know, when we perform our devotional service, chanting, hearing, remembering, chanting, if we do it in this consciousness, it is directly, means simply for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. And that is direct devotional service. Pleasing Krishna means bhakti here. Paragraph 4. Sincere endeavor to perform these 9 processes is called bhakti. So then we'll go to Shravanam. There's a paragraph that begins number 1, Shravanam. Near the end of the first paragraph of Shravanam, by hearing, now this is a, I found this is interesting. It starts with thus. I think it's the end of paragraph 1. Yes. It says, thus, I don't see it in mine. Oh yeah, it's the middle actually, it's not the end of paragraph 1. It's about the middle of paragraph 1. Thus, by hearing the holy name of the Lord, one comes to the platform of understanding the personal form of the Lord. So, I had some notes from a japa workshop which Srimati gave, and I think she's quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So this says, when you understand the personal form of the Lord, then that is the level of nishtha. After realizing the Lord's form, one can realize the transcendental qualities of the Lord. That's the level of ruchi. And one can understand his transcendental qualities, one can understand the Lord's associates, so lila, asakti. In this way, a devotee advances further and further toward complete understanding of the Lord as he awakens in realization of the Lord's holy name, transcendental form, and qualities, his paraphernalia, and everything pertaining to him. Therefore, the chronological process, chronological, everybody understands what chronological means? Means a certain order, progressive order, sequence. Is Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. The same process of chronological understanding holds true in chanting and remembering. First chanting, first hearing, then chanting, then remembering. So paragraph 2, hearing from the text of Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the most important process of hearing. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of transcendental chanting of the holy name. Therefore, the chanting and hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam are transcendentally full of mellows. How is it full of, how is Bhagavatam full of the transcendental chanting of the holy name of Krishna? I just got an idea while reading it this time. I always used to think, how is that? Of course, we know there are many verses practically in almost every lila glorifying the holy name and chanting the holy name. And then I was just thinking, there's so many incarnations, so these are also holy names. Vamana, Vamana Dev, Varaha Dev, Kurma, these are also holy names of the Lord. Okay. So now I have a question for you. This is about Shravanam. So where is the glorification in Srimad Bhagavatam or even Bhagavad Gita about hearing Shravanam? Glorification, yes? Shrivatam, Shraya Nityas. 284. Okay, yes, Nitai. Nashta Praesh Bhadeshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Okay, Janamashtami?
I was going to say that whole section.
The whole section. Shinvatam Sakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanam. Shravana Kirtanam. Any other verses? Yes, Damana?
Krishna Sakata Kirtanam
Desham satata yukta nam. Hearing Adi Purush. It's a nice verse. Machita, the one before. Machita magata prana bhutayanta parasparam. Hearing. Okay. Satam prasangam mama virya samvido. Hearing, this is 325.25, means by hearing the glories is very powerful in the association of devotees. And very quickly you proceed from shadha tarati to bhakti. Yes. Tavidhi pranipatena pariprasena sevaya. Yes, you hear from the self-realized soul. Okay, we're going to go to Kirtanam now. We'll move to Kirtanam number 2. About 3 lines down from the first paragraph of Kirtanam. It is recommended chanting be performed very loudly. So in India especially, we hear many advocates of silent chanting. Chanting in the mind. Yeah, in japa. Silent, silent. You should chant in your mind. That is the highest. Prabhupada says, such chanting should be formed very loudly. Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni says that without shame he began traveling all over the world chanting the holy name of the Lord. Similarly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has advised, Janadapi sunichena tararapi saishna amanina manadena kirtaneya sadhare. A devotee can very peacefully chant the holy name of the Lord by behaving more humbly than the grass, being tolerant like a tree, offering respects to everyone without expecting honor from anyone else. Such qualifications make it easier to chant the holy name of the Lord. So somebody is feeling some impediment is there, so here's an easy way. The process of transcendental chanting can be easily performed by anyone, even if one is physically unfit. So that's some excuse. I'm sick. I'm crippled. I'm this, I'm that. Classified lower than others. So that means, okay, I'm not a Brahmin. Devoid of material qualifications. Oh, I didn't go to high school. Some of our devotees were dropouts. Or not at all elevated in terms of pious activities. The chanting of the holy name is beneficial. So no excuse. Everyone can chant Hare Krishna. An aristocratic birth, advanced education, beautiful bodily features, wealth, and similar results of pious activities are all unnecessary for advancement in spiritual life. For one can very easily advance simply by chanting the holy name. So we'll go to paragraph 2. While chanting the holy name of the Lord, one should be careful to avoid 10 offenses. From Sanat Kumara, it is understood that even if a person is a severe offender in many ways, he is freed from offensive life if he takes shelter of the Lord's holy name. Indeed, even if a human being is no better than a two-legged animal, he will be liberated if he takes shelter of the holy name of the Lord. One should therefore be very careful not to commit offenses to the lotus feet of the Lord's holy name. Yes, two-legged animals. There was one such two-legged animal who was living in Paris. And devotees had a temple there. And Prabhupada came to visit the temple one time. And they were going on a morning walk. And this hippie, about 19 years old, completely dirty, completely drugged, jumped out from the bushes and tried to touch Prabhupada's lotus feet. So, of course, the devotees grabbed him and threw him back in the bushes. So then, when they got back to the temple from the morning walk, they found this person sitting in the middle of the temple floor. Prabhupada walked in, and he grabbed Prabhupada's feet. And Prabhupada just started stroking his head very nicely and saying, "It's all right, just chant Hare Krishna, it's all right." 20 seconds, Prabhupada was touching this person. And the devotees were, "Okay, we can't throw him out now, Prabhupada's giving him his mercy." And so then they actually kept him. They used to call him Pigpen. His name was Pigpen. Because pigs are considered dirty animals. Of course, I don't know if that's true or not. But and Pigpen, sometimes my mother would chastise me, "Your room is dirty like a pig pen." So they called this person Pigpen. So then they shaved him up and Then he looked, but he couldn't speak because he was so much on drugs. He couldn't say anything. He couldn't speak even any words. And finally, when he started speaking, he just said, all he could say was, Prabhupada, save me, Prabhupada, save me. And then one time, after a couple of weeks, they decided to go on traveling book distribution. And so I think Indradyumna Maharaj tells a story, and he went to the van, and sitting in the seat of the van was Pigpen. And he said, Pigpen, what are you doing here? He says, Pigpen says, I go sell books. So he said, okay, okay, you can come, you clean the van. You can do some cleaning, because he was doing cleaning in the temple, cleaning the temple. So they took him out in book distribution. Then the first day, Pigpen got a book bag and filled it with books and went out to distribute. And he came back and his bag was empty. And they said, well, where are all the books? He said, I sold them. And he gave him all the money for the books. They said, well, what did you tell the people? And he says, Prabhupada, save me. Prabhupada, save me. And that's how he was selling books. So eventually this devotee, he became a devotee, and he started speaking. He got initiated by Srila Prabhupada, and he started giving classes. So two-legged animals can become devotees, even, it's possible. This is one example of Prabhupada's, another example I'll tell you another time, from Calcutta Temple, another person like that. And so anyway, it's true. Prabhupada says, even if a human being is no better than a two-legged animal, he will be liberated if he takes shelter of the holy name of the Lord. So he took shelter of Prabhupada's holy name, Prabhupada. So we will go now to paragraph 3 under Kirtanam. So let's see where that is. Yes, it's the next paragraph. There is no way to atone. It's talking the ten offenses. Paragraph 2. There is no way to atone for any of these offenses. It is therefore recommended that an offender at the feet of the holy name continue to chant the holy name 24 hours a day. Constant chanting of the holy name will make one free of offenses. Then he will be gradually elevated to the transcendental platform on which he can chant the pure holy name, thus become a lover of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we might get depressed and say, oh my God, I'm an offensive chanter. So in the next paragraph, Prabhupada says, it is recommended that even if one commits offenses, one should continue chanting the holy name. In other words, the chanting of the holy name makes one offenseless. In the book Nama Kaumudi, it is recommended that if one is an offender at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, he should submit to that Vaishnava and be excused. Similarly, if one is an offender in chanting the holy name, he should submit to the holy name and thus be freed from his offenses. In this connection, there is the following statement spoken by Daksha to Lord Shiva. I did not know the glories of your personality, and therefore I committed an offense at your lotus feet in the open assembly. You are so kind, however, you did not accept my offense. Instead, when I was falling down because of accusing you, you saved me by your merciful glance. You are most great. Kindly excuse me and be satisfied with your own exalted qualities. Then the next paragraph. One should be very humble and meek to offer one's desires and chant prayers composed in glorification of the holy name, such as Ayam Mukta Kulai Upasyamanam and Nivritta Tarshaya Upagiyamanam. One should chant such prayers to become free from offenses at the lotus feet of the holy name. So what prayers can we offer to the holy name? What prayers do we know? To offer, Prabhupada says we should offer prayers, glorification of the holy name. Hari Purush.
Agadamana Yashoda Nandana Nanda Suno Pranata Karana Krishna Kamalanayana Gopi Chandra Vrindavanindra Pranata Karana Krishna Vityanega Swarupe Vayamurati Ruchata Vardhatam Namadeya.
From?
Namastakam.
Namastakam by Shri Rupa Goswami.
He glorifies the names, he gives the different names of the Lord, and then he says that O Krishna, you are very merciful in your two sarupas.
Two sarupas. Vachaka and Vacham. One is more merciful. One is the deity and one is the holy name. And of the two, the holy name is more merciful.
But he doesn't say it in this verse.
He doesn't say it in the verse. And we hear commentaries to that effect. Okay, we'll go to Smaranam. Number 3. After the quote and after the translation. According to different relationships with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there are varieties of Nam Anukirtanam, chanting of the holy name, and thus, according to different relationships and mellows, there are five kinds of remembering. So it's very interesting that Srila Prabhupada, in application, he's telling us Shravanam means, Shravanam Kirtanam, and Smaranam means to chant the holy name. That's the application. And also he said Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting holy name and reading Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's the application here. So five kinds of remembering. These are as follows. Conducting research into the worship of a particular form of the Lord. B. Concentrating the mind on one subject and withdrawing the mind's activities of thinking, feeling, and willing from all other subjects. C. Concentrating upon a particular form of the Lord. This is called meditation. D. Concentrating one's mind continuously on the form of the Lord, called Juv Anusmriti, or perfect meditation. And E. Awakening a likening for concentration upon a particular form. This is called Samadhi, or trance. Mental concentration upon particular pastimes of the Lord in particular circumstances is also called remembrance. Therefore, Samadhi, trance, can be possible in five different ways in terms of one's relationship. Specifically, the trance of devotees on the stage of neutrality is called mental concentration. So it's interesting, yesterday somebody was saying that Prahlad Maharaj is on the level of neutrality. So he is the example of perfection of remembrance. So this could be true. So a nectar of instruction, also five levels, are given. Varana Dasha, being attached to hearing of Krishna Katha. One is able to chant in ecstasy, he attains the stage of Smaranavastha, stage of remembering. Recollection, absorption, meditation, constant remembrance, and trance are the five items of progressive Krishna Smaranam. At first, this is from Nectar of Instruction, verse 8. Remembrance of Krishna may be interrupted at intervals, but later remembrance proceeds uninterrupted. When remembrance is uninterrupted, it becomes concentrated and is called meditation. When meditation expands and becomes constant, it is called anusmriti. By uninterrupted and unceasing anusmriti, one enters the stage of samadhi or spiritual trance. After smarana dasha or samadhi has fully developed, the soul comes to understand his original constitutional position. At that time, he can perfectly and clearly understand his eternal relationship with Krishna. This is called Sampati Dasha, perfection of life. So what verses can we say about Smaranam? Bhagavad Gita, there's nice verses. Yes? Thinking of what? Manmana, Bhavabhav Bhakto, Majachi. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me. Yes. Tasmat sarvishu kalishu. Mam anusmara yudhyacha. Remember me and fight. Adi Purush. Okay, 12:8. You should always think of me. Other verses? There's some famous verses. About remembering Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 8. That's the chapter on remembering Krishna. Yes, 8:5. 8:5, yes.
1857.
Acha. 1857. In all your activities, remember me. Be fully conscious of me. And you will overcome all obstacles? Is that what it says?
In all activities, just depend upon me.
Depend upon me.
And work always under my protection.
And work always under my protection.
Such devotional service, be fully conscious of
me. Such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. And then I think the next verse says, you will overcome all obstacles by this remembrance. And so there it is.
You will pass over all obstacles of conditional life.
So we'll go to number 4, Padasevanam. According to one's taste and strength, hearing, chanting, and remembrance may be followed by Padasevanam. What is Padasevanam? I won't read the purport, but you can just tell me what Prabhupada says about Padasevanam. Yes?
Tadiyanam Samarchanam.
Tadiyanam Samarchanam.
So whatever is connected to Vishnu worship is also Tadiyanam.
Okay, whatever is connected to Vishnu, the deity in the temple, Tulsi Devi, Ganga, Jamuna, serving a Vaishnava also, Tadiya.
Is it superior to Vishnu worship?
Vishnu worship. This is Padasevanam. So all these help us advance. So we'll go to number 5, Archanam. We'll go to, before the quote, there are two systems of Archana. The Bhagavat system and Pancha Chiki system. Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no recommendation of Pancha Chiki worship because in this Kali Yuga, even without deity worship, everything can be perfectly performed simply through hearing, chanting, remembering, and worship of lotus feet. In paragraph 2 of the Archanam section, in the middle, in our Krishna, this is interesting. In our Krishna conscious movement, there are brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis. But the deity worship in the temple should be performed especially by the householders. So archanam is for the grihasthas, Srila Prabhupada saying. And what about the brahmacharis and sannyasis? What should they do in the vanaprasthas? Yes, brahmacharis can go with the sannyasis to preach. And that's what was happening in America in the 70s. They were all going on Radha Damodar travelings. All the brahmacharis were out traveling Sankirtan, and the grihasthas were maintaining the temples, taking care of the deity worship. The ladies were doing the pujari work. Grihastha devotees, the vanaprastha should prepare themselves for the next status of renounced life, sannyas. Grihastha devotees, however, are generally engaged in material activities. Therefore, if they do not take to deity worship, their falling down is positively assured. Very strong statement by Srila Prabhupada. If you don't do deity worship, you will fall down. Deity worship means following the rules and regulations precisely that will keep one steady in devotional service. And in paragraph 3, Grihastha devotees must accept archana vidhi or deity worship according to the suitable arrangements and directions given by the spiritual master. Regarding those who are unable to take to deity worship in the temple, there is the following statement in Agni Purana. So some grihasthas, they cannot do the deity worship. So what about those grihasthas? Any household devotee circumstantially unable to worship the deity must at least see the deity worship. And in this way, he may achieve success also. So you go to the temple, go to Mangalarti, go to the different artis and see the deity. The special purpose of deity worship is to keep oneself always pure and clean. Grihastha devotees should be actual examples of cleanliness. Deity worship should be continued along with hearing and chanting. Therefore, every mantra is preceded by the word nama. In all the mantras, there are specific potencies of which grihastha devotees must take advantage. There are many mantras preceded by the word nama, but if one chants the holy name of the Lord, he receives the result of chanting nama many times. By chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can reach the platform of love of Godhead. One might ask them, what is the necessity of being initiated? The answer is that even though chanting of the holy name is sufficient to enable one to progress in spiritual life to the standard of love of Godhead, one is nonetheless susceptible to contamination because of possessing a material body. Consequently, special stress is given to the archana vidhi. One should therefore regularly take advantage of both the Bhagavat process and Pancha Chiki process. Yes, you can get, they will say, okay, well, you know, if I chant Hare Krishna, I don't need to have a bath, rise early in the morning. I can do it. There's no rules, anytime, anywhere. Why should I get up early? So therefore, Prabhupada said, you go to Mangalarti. You go to Mangalarti, then you chant your rounds. Then you go to class. So he had a morning program. So that's why, for this regulation and purification. So next is Vandanam. That is number 6. Because all this is here, we have nectar of devotion in the Bhagavatam. All the rules, all the offenses to avoid in deity worship. So then number 6, Vandanam. Prabhupada, huge purport here. Vandanam. Paragraph 1. There's only one paragraph. About 3 lines down. Lord has unlimited transcendental qualities and opulences, and one who feels influenced by the Lord's qualities in various activities offers prayers to the Lord In this way, he becomes successful. In this connection, the following are some of the offenses to be avoided. To offer obeisances on one hand. How many of us offer obeisances on one hand? Yes. Almost. Especially when you have your bead bag. You have your bead bag in one hand. And then you offer it with the other hand. And what do? You throw it. I see, you know, people throw it up on their back. It's a problem. It's a definite problem. To offer obeisances with one's body covered. Just roll in the dust. Yes.
Even there is some statement, one becomes a leper.
One becomes a leper. And Jananivasa was saying, well, where are all these lepers at Jagannath Rath Yatra come from? So if you offer obeisances
with your
shirt on. Okay, anyway, Prabhupada has simplified things for us, fortunately. Still, he mentions these rules just for our information. He said in the beginning, if I told you all the rules, you would faint. C, to show one's back to the deity. D, to offer obeisances on the left side of the deity. E, to offer obeisances very near the deity. So I guess the pujaris have to be careful, that one. Verse 7, dasyam. There is the following statement in regard to assisting the Lord as a servant. After many, many thousands of births, when one comes to understand he's an eternal servant of Krishna, one can deliver others from this universe. So that, what I understand is that you have understood your relationship, your eternal relationship with Krishna. If one simply continues to think he is the eternal servant of Krishna, even without performing any other process of devotional service, he can attain full success. For simply by this feeling, one can perform all nine processes of devotional service. So that's very nice, but my experience is unless you perform the other ones, you won't think you're a servant of Krishna. If you don't do the Shravanam, Kirtanam, and Archanam and all these, then the feeling won't come. You can have the feeling, but unless you do all the other things, then it's difficult. So number 8, Sakyam, in the middle of the paragraph. In this statement, the word friend is specifically used to indicate intense love. Friendship, therefore, is better than servitude. In the stage above Dasyaras, a devotee accepts the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a friend. This is not at all astonishing. For when a devotee is pure in heart, the opulence of his worship of the deity diminishes as spontaneous love for the Personality of Godhead is manifest. In this regard, Sridhar Swami mentions Sridham Vipra, who expressed to himself his feelings of obligation, thinking, or is this Sudama? Life after life, may I be connected with Krishna in this friendly attitude. So, friendship. Sridham or Sudama? I don't know. Sudama Vipra. Sudama Vipra. Yeah, maybe. Yes. You can worship Srimad Bhagavatam. Well, some people, they even offer incense and flowers and chandan. And in Radha Govinda Mandir, there's a Bhagavatam speaker. He speaks every morning, and before he speaks, he puts chandan all over his Bhagavatam and flowers, tulsi, lots of tulsi. And you get the Maha Tulsi from the Bhagavatam. Puts heaps of tulsi on his Bhagavatam. And then he starts speaking. So that is, yes. We can worship Bhagavatam, it's Krishna. So number 9, Atmanivedanam. The word Atmanivedanam refers to the stage which one who has no motive other than to serve the Lord surrenders everything to the Lord and performs his activities only to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a devotee is like a cow that is cared for by its master. When cared for by its master, a cow is not in anxiety over its maintenance. Such a cow is always devoted to its master and never acts independently, but only for the master's benefit. Some devotees therefore consider dedication of the body to the Lord to be Atmanivedanam. As stated in the book known as Bhakti Viveka, sometimes dedication of the soul to the Lord is called Atmanivedanam. Best examples of Atmanivedanam are found in Bali Maharaj and Ambarish Maharaj. Atmanivedanam is also sometimes found in behavior of Rukmini Devi at Dwarka. So, Ambarish did all nine of the processes of devotional service. We'll hear about that when we study ninth canto. So again, anyone who, here it says, Iti Pum Sarpatal Vishnu Bhakti Chen Navalakshanam. directly to the personality of Godhead. Tan manye atitam uttamam. This is the best. He is the best learned man. He is the highest person if he knows these nine processes. Tan manye atitam. He has studied everything nicely. So let's see. Sarup Siddhi Bhakti. Who calls this? Where did you get this? Oh, yeah. Who? Where is this reference? Jagannath Pandit. Okay. Aropya, Sarup Siddhi Bhakti as compared to Aropya Bhakti. Bhakti Sundarbha is mentioned. What is Aropya? So, Yashoda's understanding of Aropya Bhakti is an imposition of the mind on Bhakti. What is the actual definition of Aropya Bhakti? He thinks he's doing Bhakti, but he's not. Offering to Krishna what you like as opposed to offering to Krishna what you like. Three divisions of what?
Bhakti.
Three divisions of Bhakti. Aropa Siddha, Sangha Siddha, Sarup Siddha. Okay, Bhakti by itself is Sarup Siddha. Nine processes, which we just heard, Adha, directly. Sangha Siddha is Bhakti because it's helpful for Bhakti.
And these are like
developing detachment, good qualities, mode of goodness, Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga. Okay, Aropya Siddha is Bhakti because you offered it to Krishna.
And this is like karma.
Karma Yoga. Okay, Aropya is Karma Yoga. And Sangha is Jnana and Sarup Siddhi is Bhakti. Okay? What we like, what helps us to come to Krishna, and then what Krishna likes. So Prabhupada, in the beginning, he taught all of these. First he was telling, what you like, you offer to Krishna. And then he was saying, well, this would help Bhakti, so you do this for Krishna. And then finally, he gave us chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Bhagavatam. Even though we didn't understand, he gave us the real thing. He gave us also direct bhakti. He gave us the way to get to direct bhakti. By his own example. He was the example of Sarup Siddhi. Pizza. Pizza is Aropya. Mm-hmm. Simple prasadam is? Helps to cool down the mind. Okay, what Krishna likes? Samosa pakora, louder. Oh, he doesn't like pizza, huh? If you go to Italy, you may have some disagreement there. Okay. I think there would be agreement from Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, too. In the last days, he had pizza. Okay. Rindasroop says he likes pizza. So those pizza lovers among us can rejoice. Aropya. I finished actually what I'm going to say. Aropya. And what about devotees? Devotees are deciding what they should do for Krishna. So the question is, if you're doing what you like for Krishna, does that mean it's Aropya, because you're offering what you like to do? I would say it depends on your motive. Again, are you doing what you like to do because simply you like to do it, or are you doing what you like to do because you want to please Krishna with what you like to do? Because, or what you're good at, or what is your nature, you're offering your nature to Krishna. According to Kapila Dev, in the third canto, he also says there's devotional service in goodness, passion, and ignorance. So in goodness, it's the Varnashram system, offering to Krishna the fruits of your nature. And then passion is, I can't remember, for your own
fame.
Doing devotional service for fame. And ignorance is with violence, envious attitude towards other devotees. Devotional service and ignorance. Transcendental is just flowing naturally, huh? Pleasing Krishna. Pleasing Krishna. If your motive is to please Krishna, then that is, whatever you do, it does. And it's transcendental. If that is your motive. Yeah, it's your motive that determines. Yes.
Kernel.
Okay.
Heart shell.
Adipurush says we have to protect our bhakti like a nut. In the center there is a soft, sweet kernel, and in the outside there's a hard shell.
There's a green growth
on the shell.
So you're
Yeah, okay. We strive, we employ all three. We strive for a Sarup Siddhi.
Then we protect it with knowledge and...
We protect it with the middle one, knowledge and...
Detachment.
Yeah, and to function in this world, we follow Varnashram. So all three go together.
And you see that today.
Yeah, we see those who don't, or even some ladies in Radhakund. People who go to Radhakund and to renounce everything.
Without
the Varnashram, without just going above, becoming Babaji. It's very dangerous. Very dangerous. Prabhupada gave... Yes, Prabhupada, that's what's his teaching. He gave us the highest right in the beginning, even though we were so unqualified. He just gave us chanting Hare Krishna, studying Bhagavatam. That you told us the other day, Bhaktisiddhanta wouldn't even let some brahmacharis touch the Bhagavatam, but Prabhupada gave it to the hippies. He said, now all of you should become gurus. 1966. Now I want everyone to become a guru and go all over the world. And they had a globe. And they were dividing up the globe. Someone would go, one hippie would go here, one would go. But they became devotees of Srila Prabhupada. But yes, that was Prabhupada's vision.
Yeah.
Verse 926 and 927.
Patram Pushpam is pure devotion, and Yadgarosya Dasnasi, it's a very special verse. It's not actually karma yoga. Because in karma yoga, it's not like just Aroba Siddhi Bhakti. Because in karma yoga, you first do, then offer. And it's not also nishkama karma yoga, because in nishkama karma yoga, you offer only certain auspicious things to Krishna, certain fruits, certain actions. But Krishna recommends, yad karoshi yad asnasi, everything, offer everything. So that goes beyond this.
Like Atmani Vedanam. It's more like Atmani Vedanam.
So that's the specific recommendation to Arjuna. It's like
offer everything.
Medium stage bhakti. Vishnachipradi Thakur gives us, if you mind, I can tell you the term that Vishnachipradi Thakur gives to name this state. Mm-hmm. It's Gyanakarma Mishra Pradhani Buddha Bhakti.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, right.
Pradhani Buddha Bhakti. It's.
Jnana, Karma, Mishra, Pradhani, Buddha.
But then Bhakti is primary, it's not secondary, it's primary.
In 927.
927, yes, 927.
I just have a new Prabhupada on the tape.
Yeah, Prabhupada does sometimes say that. But he didn't make much distinction in his preaching. He just engaged everyone in Karma Yoga. He calls it, I mean, if you read look at the titles of his chapters, Karma Yoga, and Krishna, Action in Krishna Consciousness. So... He accepted that. Any questions or comments anymore on these verses? Nectar of devotion. It's not exactly. I mean, it's there. You have to search for it. It gives a list of all the incarnations and then all the rasas, the 12 rasas. And if you go to the Sanskrit, to the other translations of nectar of devotion, then you'll find how they corresponding.
And
they're listed in Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion. The incarnations like Varaha and Kapila, and them, they're all listed. And then right after the list of the incarnations, there's a list of the 12 rasas, direct and indirect. And then you look at the list and you can put them together. But actually, I got my information from a translation of Nectar of Devotion, which had them put together. So we can check. Yeah, Bhakti Samrita Sindhu. You can check Banu's edition for that. I haven't looked that up yet. I should look that up and see if he has that.
Srila Prabhupada's
also
there.
It's not. They're not connected. But you can connect. Kapila Devi Shanta. They also have colors. Yes, smoky and this and that. Colors. What is Nrisimhadev's color? I don't know. And Krishna is Madhurya Ras. I don't remember the chapter. It's in one of those later chapters, one of the later, not the first 19. So, you know, when it gets into the rasas, the different rasas, Any other questions or comments? Okay, we'll stop here. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.